Well, thank you. You can hear me okay? Thank you. My name's Anita, and like Al said, I am one of you. Just a little back history for me. It's actually 5 years, 4 months today, clean and sober. Thank you. And I'm also the director of the REACT program. I teach there as well as run the office kind of thing. So today he asked me to do a talk on codependency. So if you guys have heard of Tim Fletcher, all the talks that he does is all centered around complex trauma. So it makes our treatment center way different than any treatment center out there, which is why we're growing like great guns. In 3 years that we've been open, we're going on our third location. We've got one in Surrey, BC, one that's opening up in Windsor, Ontario in January. I'll be going down there to train the facilitators. We have one that's going to be opening up in Cuba. Yeah, and there's another one here, Moorbrook House, which is under St. Boniface Street Links, Marion Willis. We're going to be opening up a second location here in Winnipeg. So it's growing because it's different. It's not I've been to all the treatment centers that are out there, and they're great if you're kind of stuck in that bubble of protection. But once you finish the program, you're kind of thrown back out there into the real world again with very little tools. So what makes our treatment center different is that it's school. So we retrain our brains the way that we think. We teach you all the science behind how did you become an addict. And we focus on your family of origin, right back from when you were a child. So complex trauma, just to let you know what that is. Simple trauma is a one-time event. So that could be like a rape, a car accident, something that's very traumatic, but it just happened once. Complex is ongoing over a long period of time. So that's usually from the earliest memories that we have, usually about 5 years old, till about 16. So in that time frame, a lot of us have suffered a lot of trauma. So trauma, we break it down into four different categories. One is abuse, which is emotional abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, the obvious ones. But the more subtle ones are abandonment, so CFS. If you were placed into foster care, that is a form of trauma, and that's ongoing over a long period of time, all the moves, all the changes. You never have a consistent home base. We also have what's called the 12 basic needs. That's a class that we teach, and the most obvious needs are your food, your shelter, your clothes, but there's a lot of subtle needs. So there's the 12 basic needs that aren't getting met. So our treatment center, we focus on what were the things that you didn't get met, and how did that shape you to become an addict? So we kind of go through stages of change. There are different benchmarkers along your life that we point out at REACT. So you kind of go, oh, okay, that's where I started from. So most of us were addicts. We didn't just all of a sudden wake up one day and say, I'm an addict. Addiction was never our problem. The drugs and alcohol, never our problem. That was the solution to the problem. So what was the problem? Why was it that we need to numb and avoid? What was it that we're trying to get away from? And it's the complex trauma. So we have a three-month program. It's wonderful. If any of you guys want to come, it's all free. You just have to put in an application, and you probably start within the 2 weeks. So today's topic is one of the topics that we do teach at REACT, and it's codependency. So I'm going to talk about codependency in relation to complex trauma. So codependency is huge, and it's one of the biggest overused terms in our society. And people don't really know exactly what that means. It's codependent. Oh, you're codependent. Well, what does that mean? Like, break that down into understandable bite-sized pieces that I can apply to my life. So we're going to use codependency. You can be codependent with a lot of things. We were codependent to our drugs and alcohol, but I'm going to talk about codependency in relation to our relationships. So even bigger than our addiction to drugs and alcohol, we have an even bigger addiction to another person. So we're going to talk about codependency. How did we become codependent? Why did we become codependent on another person? It is one of the hardest pieces to recovery, and if you don't get a handle on this piece that I'm going to talk about today, it's next to impossible to have healthy relationships. We think we're having healthy relationships, but it's not really. It's kind of tenuous. If you're like me, and I was engaged to be married 9 times, and I was a relationship junkie, I never got to the level of intimacy that I was looking for because I was just numbing and avoiding all of my negative emotions, but it also numbed and avoided all of the good emotions. So I was just kind of faking it. So one of the most damaging things that complex trauma does is produces shame. So we're very shame-based people. We have a whole life that we've built on top of our shame. So I'm going to talk about where does shame come from and how did we get to that shame? What happened to us that produced the shame? So shame plus living in survival mode, that makes having healthy relationships next to impossible. Doesn't mean it's impossible, but next to impossible. So I'm still working on it. I'm 56 years old. I got sober at 50. Been single for the first time in my life for the last 5 years. And I'm not ready. I understand that I have so much work still to do on myself. So, the definition of codependency. A codependent relationship involves one person supporting or trying to solve another person's unhealthy needs or problems, including nearly all of their self-esteem and emotional needs. One person ends up as an enabler to another person's poor health, meaning, oh, you're sick, okay, I'll do that for you. Oh, you've got fibromyalgia, okay, so then I'm going to do the lion's share of all the cleaning and looking after stuff. There's merit to when a person is sick, but there's also feeding a person's sickness. So you're enabling them to stay that way because you have a certain role now that you've taken on to that unhealthy person in your relationship. I know quite a few people that do that. Immaturity, again, one person can be the enabler of somebody that's very immature. Oh, you know, he can be there. I'll just use he because I'm a she, but he'll be at a party or a gathering and he's acting like a complete and utter ass and very immature. And you're making excuses for him. Oh, you know, yeah, he's just had a bad day. And, oh, sorry about that. You know, sorry that he's being that way. You're enabling him to be that way because you're taking responsibility for his or her immaturity. Or it could be even underachievement, an enabler. So that would be, and this was always me in my relationships, I'm the one that paid all the bills. I made the money, and they had part-time jobs at best. Oh, there's all kinds of excuses why that person could not be working full-time and paying half their share of whatever the bills are. If we went for dinner, I was always the one that had to pay for it. So I was an enabler to an underachiever. The sun rose and set on him, so I wasn't willing to look at that character defect in him, that he's an underachiever. So I enabled him for the 3 years that we dated. He didn't have to work. I paid for everything. Or an addiction. There's a saying that we have an addiction, and with regards to our family members, and I'm sure all of you guys have kind of been on the one end of this, and it's our some of our family members, they want us well, but they need us sick. And that was evident. I heard Tim say that 5 years ago, and I thought, I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid. Until I started getting better, until I stopped drinking and doing drugs, and my family, interestingly enough, distanced themselves from me. And I thought, well, what is that all about? So I would go to a few family functions, and it was, oh, Anita's the problem. Oh, well, remember when you did this when you were really drunk, the last party? Like, they were always bringing up my past, and I thought, huh, they want me well, but they need me sick. And why is because they don't know how to change. So if I'm going to be well, my behavior is going to change, which means they're going to have to change their relationship with me. And nobody was willing to do that because that meant work on their part. There was only one sister, and I'm one of five, that stepped up to the plate and said, okay, I'm game. I'll be with you and find out who you are now as you're discovering who you are. But the rest of them, they needed me sick. So little ways of sabotaging my sobriety, if I had stayed hanging out with them, would have just ended in disaster. So the enabler is preoccupied with the needs of the other person and fails to meet their own needs. Is anybody here the enabler in the relationship? Right? There was... after 3 years, I used to, you know, do my hair, I used to wear your makeup, I'd get my nails done, and after 3 years in these long-term relationships, I was barely showering. I had greasy hair, it was always up in a clip, no makeup, God knows I never did my nails. So my needs were way down here, and the needs of that person came way before anything for me. So I was definitely an enabler. So what does codependency involve? It involves being addicted to a person. So we're addicted to a person. We're being addicted to a destructive pattern of relating with that person. We're trying to have a relationship without the necessary ingredients for a healthy relationship, so which would be trust, openness, honesty, self-acceptance, and respect. How a shame-based person approaches relationships is not a healthy way. And most of us aren't aware that we're shame-based people, but hopefully after today, you're all going to be signing up saying, yeah, I'm a shame-based person. So complex trauma and codependency, that's the missing piece in our understanding of codependency, that codependency is hatched in complex trauma, and it comes from our history. Most of us were not willing to go back there. When we were at REACT, phase one is we have one topic for 4 weeks, and we just touch on it. When you get to phase two, we pick the heavy ones, and we do that whole week on that one topic. So shame is one of them, and we just delve into shame, and it brings up a lot of the memories. But it's a good thing, because we need to go back and bring those things back up and walk through them to get through them to the other side in an environment that is healthy, because we're going to go to shame, but we're going to have people that are going to be very loving, accepting, respectful, gone through it themselves, so they know just what to say. So it's a very healing thing. So complex trauma usually happens in the home of a narcissistic parent. Abuse, abandonment, neglect, our needs not being met. The child feels as if it's our fault and that we're not lovable, we're not valuable, we're not good enough, which produces shame. So our shame started way back, a long time ago. So shame is a disease of the self, that we don't have any positive feelings about ourselves. We don't like ourselves. We're not comfortable in our own skin. And we'll do just about anything to get out of our own skin. Guilt is I've done something wrong. Shame is I am wrong. And we'll go to great lengths to hide our shame, and that is our core belief about ourselves. We'll go to great lengths to hide that, because our deepest fear is that if they find out who the real me is, they'll leave me. They won't like me. And not one person I've ever met has a different view of their own personal shame. It's a lie, and we were groomed to believe that lie to protect the nuclear family and the family secrets. But once you start discerning which one is that wasn't a lie, that wasn't true about me, then you start to heal. So one of the things that we do to try to hide our shame is that we look outside ourselves for the solution. So we don't go inside to try to fix ourselves from the inside out. We go, okay, what can we do out here to hide our shame? If others validate me and give me positive attention, then that makes me feel that I have value. So a lot of us will go to great lengths to have our image, one of our masks that we wear, be just all that in a bag of chips, because we're getting validation for that. Deep down, we don't believe that we deserve that, but the mask that we've spent a lot of time perfecting gives us that, but it's not authentic. It's just pertaining to the mask that we created for ourselves. So we believe that positive feelings about ourselves must come from somebody else. We must be in a relationship to feel that we have value. Being in a relationship proves that I'm lovable. I remember when I was 15 and I was engaged to be married when I was 15, but go figure that one. But my family, who treated me like dirt, like toilet paper on the shoe, horribly narcissistic parents. And when I was dating this very respectable boy from a very respectable family in the neighborhood, I had value. All of a sudden, they treated me different. I was getting respect for the first time. So I believed that I needed to be in a relationship, then I had value, because that was what was mirrored back to me in my own nuclear family. So hence, set up my whole career of relationship hopping after that. So being in a relationship proves I'm lovable. Not being in a relationship, I'm not lovable. We actually broke up for 3 months and I didn't tell my family. I just, oh, he's busy, he can't come to this function, and oh, he's busy. And finally one day I opened up and said, we broke up like 3 months ago. And they were like, oh my gosh, why didn't you tell us? And I remember being 15 saying, because I didn't think you would love me anymore. And I got total silence, because I was dead on, but I didn't realize that then. And then it was, oh, well, that's not true. That's not true. From that moment on, they started treating me back to how they used to treat me. So again, just solidified that I only have worth if I am with somebody else. So some of the approaches to relationships that are unhealthy, so I'm a shame-based person, I'm getting validation outside of myself, not just for who I am, but for what I do. So a couple of approaches to relationships is the hero, the helper, the hero helper person, and then the needy person. Those two people attract. So you've got two shame-based people. One is going to be the hero helper, Superman cape, da-da-da-da, I'm going to come in and I'm going to fix all your problems. You feel unsafe, I will make you feel safe. I will fight whoever for you. And then that person becomes needy. So the hero is getting validated. Thank you so much. You have so much value for keeping me safe. Thank you, thank you. So that hero person now says, now if I go outside of myself and become the hero person, I'm going to get validated. I'm going to feel like I'm worth something. And the needy person who may have been very abused as a child and becomes very needy and nothing was ever done, all of a sudden is getting all of the love that was missing from their childhood. Oh my gosh, I feel so important now. You're actually protecting me. So two very unhealthy approaches, two very unhealthy roles in a relationship. The next one is the narcissist and the co-narcissist. So the narcissist is the person that, you know what, the sun rises and sets on me. The co-narcissist says, yes, it does. I will make sure I open the blinds and close the blinds every day so that you, I need you to believe that. I want you to believe that, and I am believing that. So my dad was a huge narcissist. It was all about him. He was the alcoholic. He drank a 40-pounder a day my whole entire life. My mom, who was the co-narcissist and enabler, just allowed him to, although she made his life hell, but she allowed him to. So there's five kids. They've got this very toxic relationship. We had so much neglect going on, it's not even funny. And then the beating, we were beat all the time. There was somebody's getting thrown down the stairs. Why? Because you're needy. What do you mean you want something? Get away from me. Go play. Go downstairs. You're crying. Get away. Come here. I'll give you something to cry about. Every little thing about a child that needs to be nurtured was shunned. We were made to feel that we are a burden. We have no value, and you're not doing anything that makes us want to love you. So very low self-esteem starting right from the get-go. So the narcissist, the co-narcissist, very unhealthy. So in both cases of the narcissist and the co-narcissist, both are working to solve the other person's problems. So my mom came from a very abusive home. Her mother was a dragon lady. I'd never met her. She was dead before I was born. So she didn't get any of the nurturing, the love. Well, my dad was the town son's drunk, or the town drunk's son, and my mom married, and she was from a very prominent family. So he was the hero that said, I will protect you from your mother, and she was the enabler, I am going to protect my hero. So their relationship, narcissist, co-narcissist, started way back when they were dating, and then continued all through their adult life, and unfortunately they had children. Another characteristic of a codependent person is that we believe that I must be happy all the time. If I'm sad or angry, the other person might leave me. So I believed that in my relationships, that I needed to be sad and happy, all the time. Because if I was sad or angry as a child, then I was left. Then I was put in my room for a whole day. So the message was, you are nothing unless you're happy or glad. You have to be glad that you're in this family and happy that we're your parents. And then, of course, we really do a core belief that we believe that if they see the real me, they might abuse me, they might abandon me, or they might neglect me. So we're attracting people in our real-time lives now as adults based on what was groomed and what we were groomed to believe about ourselves back then. And that's our complex trauma. So I must keep them happy all the time. People pleasing. This one's huge. Any people pleasers here? Yeah. Lots of people. Why do you think you're a people pleaser? We're groomed to believe that if they're not happy, if my primary caregivers are not happy, that they might leave me. If they're not happy, that it's a reflection on me. I had a nickel every time that I heard one of my parents say, if you kids weren't so blah, 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 I wouldn't be pissed off and hitting you right now. I'm like, you believe that. So that's a reflection on me if they're not happy. So what did I grow up? I grew up to be groomed to be a people pleaser. I had no idea who I was as a child or an adult later on, but because I was hypersensitive to what's going on with my two parents. So I could be downstairs in my bedroom and they're coming home from work, and just the way my dad put his keys on the kitchen table, I knew what kind of mood he was in. So I knew who I had to be based on his mood. My mom walking across the kitchen upstairs, I knew exactly what type of mood she was in. And I was like adjusting myself accordingly. So people pleaser, born out of fear. Fear for our safety, fear that our needs are not going to get met based on their moods. Most of us believe as people pleasers that I can't be happy unless they're happy. I remember laughing with my little brother once and told to shut up. What's there to be happy about? Shut up. Be quiet. Little things like that are grooming me to go, okay, I can't be happy unless they're happy. And of course, they're happy when they're drinking. So as soon as they start drinking, we can start being happy again. So I'm already being groomed to be an addict, like way before I ever picked up the bottle. People pleaser, we will take responsibility for their emotions. We're going to do their responsibilities. We're going to enable them to be immature and irresponsible. A people pleaser is going to do for you what you should be doing for yourself. That's what a people pleaser is groomed to believe, that I'm going to do for you what you should be doing for yourself. I'm going to do your responsibilities. Our radar that is alert to their moods and their needs, we try to anticipate what they're going to want or what they're going to need before they ask for it. With my mom, I would ask her on a Friday, can I go sleep over at Betty Ann's? I was 10. No. Okay. Next week I would try on a Thursday. Mom, can I go sleep over at Betty Ann's? No. How come? Because I said so. Okay. So I learned, start on Monday. I started cleaning. House was spotless when she came home from work. I started, Mom, can I do that for you? Mom, on Tuesday, Mom, do you ever look nice today? That's a really pretty sweater. Oh, thank you. Oh, that's really nice of you. Oh, I learned to manipulate. So by the time Thursday night came along, she's flying high, because every time I say, Mom, I'm doing something, can I do this for you? Mom, can I do that for you? Oh, for sure, for sure. So I learned at the age of 10 that by the time Thursday come and I say, Mom, she goes, she's already in a good mood, because I've already groomed her to believe that there's something else nice going to happen. I say, Mom, would it be okay if I went to Betty Ann's this weekend, do you think? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, for sure. So I became an adult who learned how to manipulate to get other people to do what I wanted right from a very early age. Little side note, I needed to be out of the house every weekend because we had a grandfather that my grandfather stayed with us, and he sexually abused me from the age of 5 to 13 on the weekends. My mom let him because he would buy Kentucky Fried Chicken. So very toxic family. So in a narcissistic family, codependent relationship, if there's kids in the family, the pressure is put on the kids to enable the parents' bad behavior. My parents had many bad behaviors, and it was up to us to enable them to do it. We weren't allowed to talk about what was going on inside the house because that's our laundry. We don't air our dirty laundry. So we were groomed to enable them to do bad behavior, and we couldn't talk about it. Thank you. So what are the things that we sacrifice when now we're becoming codependent little beings? We've become codependent teens, and now we're codependent adults. We're codependent on other people because that's all we know. So we're going to sacrifice our own needs and our own desires. I remember watching TV every Friday. We'd sit beside my sister on the floor, and I would say, "Do I like this? Do I like this? Do I like this?" She would get mad at me. "I don't know. Do you like it or not?" I'm like, "I don't know." I think back on that now, and I didn't know what I liked or I didn't like. I was on hyper alert for what everybody else liked or didn't like. I was in survival mode. So my needs and my desires, sacrificing when you're in a codependent relationship now, say we're adults and we're codependent on each other, sacrificing our friends. Every healthy relationship needs same-sex friends outside of your relationship. I need girlfriends that I need to go and get some of my needs met just with girls. I need him to go have male relationships, appropriate ones, and not just going to the bar or watching strippers, but some healthy ones, because we can't provide all of our needs for each other. That's very unhealthy, and we're going to get into a codependent relationship. So we sacrifice our friends, our support people, our activities. How many of us, we get into a relationship and all of a sudden, after a very short period of time, it's just you and them. There's nobody else. You've distanced yourself from your family and his family and all your other friends. You take a back seat, and now it's just this. It's just this, a very, very small world. It's just a little bomb waiting to go off. And we know that bomb. Boundaries. We do a whole week on boundaries. I didn't know we were allowed to have boundaries. I didn't know what a boundary was. My mom used to say, "Oh, we live out of each other's back pockets. We're just that close of a family." No, we're just a bunch of sick tickets that are just in each other's face and business where you had no right to be. So when you're in a toxic relationship and you're codependent on that person, our boundaries, we move our boundaries. We think we have very clear boundaries. Morals, our values, we know right from wrong. We know what we want. We will tolerate what we won't tolerate. We know what's a deal breaker and what's not a deal breaker in our relationships. But what happens is we have somebody that does a deal breaker. He cheated on you. That's a deal breaker. That's one of those, okay, I always said I was just going to leave. But do we? No. We will stay because we're dependent on that relationship. Because we have not built or fed any other relationships in our lives. That's our survival right there. So what we do is we tell them adamantly, "I will not tolerate that. I told you what would happen if that would happen. If you did that, yes, I'm sorry, this and that. Okay." So we might have told one of our friends, and they go, "Well, why did you go back to him? You said you would never." "Oh, but he was really sorry." "No, he was really sorry." "Yes, he was." So what did we do? We moved a boundary. We had pretty clear boundaries, and maybe our boundaries out here. Well, he did one thing. Okay, now our boundaries here. And what happens? Lots of different things will happen now in the boundary. We just keep moving it. So therefore, now we've become that enmeshed family that we're used to. And people say, "Well, how come you never left those relationships?" And I said, "Well, it wasn't that bad." And they're like, "Why? What do you mean it wasn't that bad?" Now I know. It's because it was familiar. Because it was the same environment that I grew up in. So it wasn't that bad to me. It was tolerable. So our relationship, when we're codependent, now operates by that inferior and superior dynamic. So one has to be better than the other, higher than the other, and each one's vying for that top one. "Oh, I'm gonna win this argument, and I'm gonna be superior. And aha, I feel good." And then they're just stewing, and next they're looking for an opportunity. "Oh, now I'm superior." So we've got a superior-inferior dynamic, that is subconscious, that is completely unhealthy, but that's familiar. So we're no longer in that 50-50 part of our relationship, sharing responsibilities. Now it's, well, you're going to do more for me. Okay, now you're going to do more for me. It's never a 50-50. It's very unhealthy. So is everybody with me so far? Does that make sense? Does anybody have any questions? If you have any, just throw them out there. When I'm in class and I'm teaching at React, everybody's just firing questions, so I'd be used to it. Everything's okay? Okay. So what are some other results of complex trauma? We weren't, as children, taught how to meet our own needs in a healthy way. Parents didn't consistently meet the child's need and made the child feel selfish for having needs. A child had to regularly set aside their own needs and serve the needs of the parents. Now, one thing I want to mention about our parents doing that to us, it's a multi-generational. They had that done to them. They're doing it to us. We'll do it to our kids subconsciously if we don't recognize that's not a healthy behavior. As children, we were wounded and felt unsafe and alone, which puts us into survival mode, which is why all of us are just incredible warriors. You want to put the you want to know the most incredibly strong people on the planet is the addict. Is the addict, because we've been to hell and back. And we're very self-sufficient because we've been in survival mode a very long time. So in order to survive physically in childhood, a child had to squash all the ingredients of a healthy relationship, which is trust and openness, to go into survival mode. So even having healthy relationships outside of my nuclear family, even like going to my best friend, I was just quiet. It was an odd thing. They were loving on each other. They were giving each other compliments, giving me compliments. And I was just like, to me, it felt wrong. I thought they were just being greasy and fake, because for the first time, I actually had an accurate mirror that I'm looking into, and not distorted mirror that I, in my house, which I thought that was the accurate mirror. So now in adult life, we have great difficulty in approaching life and relationships in a healthy way. We develop strategies for getting our needs met that result in relationships that are going to fail, and we're going to end up wounding ourselves further. Codependency develops an emotionally abusive and dishonest environment that we live in. The sad part is that the child learns to emotionally abuse themselves and let others do it to them. So there's a saying, we say we teach people how to treat us. Well, if we're not treating ourselves well, we're teaching them that too. We're telling them that it's okay to do that. Soul wounds do not heal if they're ignored. So for years, I ignored my child abuse. I was a ballroom dancer. I competed. I lived in Vancouver. I had a very successful life. On the exterior, I was buffed. I was polished. I was admired. I was, you know, hobnobbing with, like, John Travolta's and all the things that I thought were very successful things. And I ignored, and I ran. I ran away from home when I was 13. And then moved away to BC when I was 18. And I moved 52 times in 27 years from BC to Newfoundland and lived in every province in between. I kept running from myself. So as soon as I started creating relationships, more than, like, say, 3 months, 6 months, they started getting deeper. I was out. I had to go. I had to make new friends. Those wounds, they continue to shape and govern our emotions today if we don't deal with them. Our self-image and our ways of interacting in relationships, it's all a mirror of what we're hiding. Sorry, my just thinking of another thing that I was going to tell you, but I don't think I will. We long to belong, and we're going to keep seeking relationships that just based on belonging. If we didn't belong when we were a kid or we felt like we were the odd duck out, we're going to continuously seek relationships just to feel like that we belong. But that's not the healthy way to seek a relationship. To feel like you belong, you need to go through your own stuff and then just feel like you belong in your own skin without anybody else's validation. Shame does damage far beyond the original dysfunction because it damages the wounded souls unintentionally, and we perpetuate that same pain in every relationship that we form from then on. It's kind of like a soul murder. So our codependency is a defense system that causes us to wound ourselves. It allows people to survive physically, but leaves them feeling dead and empty inside. So how many people can go to a party and be the life of the party, and they're doing all the right things, they're saying all the right things, everybody's laughing with them, but you're just feeling dead inside. You're like, God, I'm in a room full of people, but I've never felt more alone in my entire life. That's your soul. That's your wounded soul saying, you got to go in there and you got to fix that. Because that's all external, and the external ain't cutting it anymore. And that's why it gets harder, and our bottoms get harder the older that we get. Because we can't live in our own skin anymore. Codependency. We're using relationships today to try to meet the emotional needs that weren't met in childhood. We're developing unhealthy strategies to get people to meet our needs, and these strategies seem to work for a while, but only end up wounding us further. So if you take on the victim role and you're getting your needs met that way, how long does that last? How long before they go, all right, see ya, I'm out of here. Like, seriously? You can't just be victim all the time. Or the hero role. Hero and the people pleaser. You're coming in and you're fixing everything. How long can you really keep that up before you kind of go, no, I don't want to be in this relationship anymore? So it seems to meet our needs short term, but not long term, because they're unhealthy. Manipulate. How many people are master manipulators here? It took Tim teaching me how to actually not manipulate. I'm like, am I manipulating? He says, for sure. I overheard you say, like, your car was dead and you needed a ride back to your house. And I heard you say, hey, how's it going? Oh, no kidding. So where do you live? Oh, no kidding. Oh, that's right by me. Well, son of a gun, eh? Like, I set it up and manipulated with a carrot until all of a sudden they're like, oh, my God, can I give you a ride? I'm like, that'd be great. He says, that's manipulation when you're not asking directly for what you'd like and giving them the option to say no. Because when we learn to manipulate, no can't be an answer. No is not an option. And we learned that from a child. Look at me and my mom and the weekend. No could not be the answer because I needed to be out of there for the weekend. So I learned to manipulate. We're all great manipulators. So now I ask, you know what? My car is dead. Is there any chance that I could give a ride? And please be okay if no is the answer. I'm totally okay with that. That's not manipulation. That's giving the person, you know what, I'd love to, but, you know, I'm already late for a thing. No worries. That's fine. You always want to give the person an option to say no and be okay with that. An attempt to heal our shame by ignoring the internal world and focusing on the external world. That belief that relationship with Mr. X is going to fix me doesn't work. It doesn't work anymore. We tried that. We've tried it many, many times, but we don't know any other way to do it. It doesn't work. You're just setting yourself up for another codependent relationship, and it's all because of the shame from a long time ago. So they're unhealthy behaviors that we're subconsciously doing. And in our society, it's... it's everywhere. People that come to React after their first couple of weeks, they come back and they go, oh my God, there's complex, everybody's got complex trauma. We're like, yeah, I know. We used to think everybody else was fine and we were the messed up ones. Turns out we just need a little tweaking, but we're actually the healthiest ones out there. What we needed to live in that external world was a little staycation from all the filters that we've got going on in our head, because it's like a hamster on a wheel in there, right? So what's the right answer? What's the right answer? Well, the right answer is to go through your heart. Me and my talk French. Through your heart and your authentic self and find the answer. Well, we don't know who our authentic self is. So just to wrap up the codependency, we're codependent. We can be codependent in a healthy way. We can be dependent on, if you're having a relationship and it's a relatively healthy one, you know what, I'm going to take out the garbage, you do the dishes. That's not codependency. That's just making an arrangement so that, you know what, that particular thing's yours. I'm going to take responsibility for this one. That's not codependency. A good marker if you to know that you're in a codependent relationship is, do you have any other friends? And when you're with those friends, are you constantly texting back and forth to your other person? Right? You know you're in a codependent relationship when you're in the bathroom, you left your phone out there, you come back and you find your phone blown up and you're like, well, where were you? I'm like, I was taking a crap. I had some time to myself. That's frightening for us codependent people, because we have so much shame. We believe that you're doing something with somebody else. We think that we're, because we believe, that's the inherent belief that we're not good enough and that you're going to figure that out one of these days. So I have to micromanage everything that you do so that you don't find out that I don't want you talking to anybody else. Because I know, my core belief is that they are better than I am and you're going to figure it out one day. And that's codependency. Questions? Okay.
Hi, my name is Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah, sorry, I showed up late, but sorry, I missed your introduction or whatnot. But thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Yeah, so that's really great and such. And I did quite a number of years already with counseling for codependency and such. And yeah, you just find the problem really well, and I relate a lot on all of it, but something specifically. So what do you do in your work? What do you suggest in going forward for people to, you know, grow out of this, to move out of it, and to be aware of it, and basically, you know, recovery from this? What's the message?
Go to React. You have to deal with. You have to figure out what are the behaviors and characteristics that I've adapted to survive, that I'm still, they kept me safe when I was younger, but they're not working for me now. What are some of the unhealthy behaviors that I'm displaying? That was a first step for me. There are 60 characteristics of someone who has complex trauma. So do you guys want to know the 60? I've got them right here. There are 60 characteristics, so they're unhealthy ways that we got our needs met. Manipulate is one of them. Or do you find yourself manipulating people instead of just asking directly? Do you find you have control issues or trust issues in your relationship? That's nothing to do with them. That's to do with us. If I have trust issues, which I always did, why do I have trust issues? Well, I couldn't trust that my needs were going to be met consistently. The message was that I was an unwanted child. I was told that I don't know how many times, and then proven it by their behaviors over a long period of time. So my complex trauma, I had this black filter that I filtered the whole world. I wasn't seeing myself accurately because no one had ever shown me who I was accurately, not until I met Tim Fletcher. And I didn't believe him for a long time. I'm like, yeah, what does he want? It's the first thing we think, oh, you're being nice to me. What do you want? right? That's nothing to do with him. That's to do with me. And that was because I was groomed to believe when my mom was nice to me, because she wanted something from me. She wanted something from me. Yep.
How about, like, people pleasing?
Yes.
Like, I grew up on a block where there was an Italian family, a Mexican family, a black family, an Indian family, and we were all poor.
Yep.
So we all helped each other, mm-hmm. right? Okay? And then I was in a restaurant hotel business for 40, 45 years,
yep.
right? And we were taught to be hospitable, right?
Right.
So
yep.
You're going to be nice to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I inherited those through that, mm-hmm. or am I normally like that?
Right.
Italian people are normally like that. But then I see someone that's a complete idiot,
mm-hmm.
and then I just want to let loose on them.
Right.
So I don't know what's right, what's wrong.
Well, that's a kind thing. Those are values that were instilled in you, and that you're helping your fellow man. That's what we're all about now, is about... You know, me standing up here and each one of you doing some kind of service work, we're helping our fellow man. That's a kind thing to do. So that was a good thing that you were taught. However, if it had a price of you go do for the neighbors or else,
yeah.
then that's different. Then that's going to be a negative thing. So therefore, now what you're being groomed to believe is, all right, I don't have to be happy, and I don't want to do it, but you're going to make me do it. So then you become that people pleaser as an adult. But if you're doing it because, you know what, they're just good people, it's a very good thing. But some people are just dickweeds, and you gotta filter those ones out. And that's a narcissist. Did that answer your question? Okay. Anybody else have a question? Does anybody have complex trauma? Yeah. So, how much time have I got left? 10 minutes? 5 minutes? Do you want to end here, or do you want me to keep going? I'm good either way. What's that? Okay, I'll go for a couple more minutes, and I'll check in with you. So, I wasn't sure when I wasn't drinking the Kool-Aid yet, just because Tim Fletcher poured it 5 years ago, that I had complex trauma, because I hadn't looked back at my stuff yet. So what solidified it for me that I'd had complex trauma is because out of 60, I had like 59. That's pretty high. Of unhealthy ways of getting my needs met today. So that was where I started from. Started becoming aware of, okay, you can't manipulate. Now I have to learn to ask people directly for stuff. So, hypersensitive to disrespect. How many people are super hypersensitive to disrespect? Right. Right. Right? La. So why do you think we're hypersensitive to disrespect? And what I mean by hypersensitive, not just sensitive, but hypersensitive, is that we're reading into other people's, they just look at you and you're just reading, you just want to go right now, don't you? You just want to, you're looking at me. I'm reading into, just looking this way, and I'm already knowing exactly what you're thinking. Well, I've got a filter on here that's just reading disrespect into everything. So hypersensitive to disrespect is insane. And this is where you get people that are just picking fights for absolutely no reason, or you got a spouse that you wake up and you got a pillow over your face and you're like, what the hell did I do? You were breathing too hard and you were, yeah. So hypersensitive, but we get that because of our grooming, because of trauma growing up. So there was a double standard growing up. We had to respect our parents, but they didn't have to respect us. That we take into adulthood, and that is so unhealthy. We believe that we have to respect everybody else, but they don't have to respect us. That's the message, and that's the lesson that we take from that double standard that our parents taught us, is that I have to respect you, but you don't have to respect me. That's what my parents taught me. So people say, oh my God, why are you such a doormat? Oh, I was groomed to be a doormat. We don't deal well with stress. That's a huge one. We don't deal well with stress. What did stress look like in your house? What did conflict look like in your house? Conflict, I didn't know that was just actually a healthy thing. I actually just taught a class last week on conflict, and conflict is you've got the circle of conflict, and you've got the little person walking up, and you go, oh, I got conflict. I'm going to walk through and get to the other side, and it becomes a lesson. So usually when we're kids and we walk up to that conflict, and a parent will come beside you and hold your hand and get you through the conflict, and then it becomes a lesson in a healthy home. In an unhealthy home, there's conflict. You're walking up, and you're like, ah, and you run up. You run back out, and you say, nope. And then you try it again maybe two or three times. You go, ah, nope. And what do we learn to do? Don't go near conflict. So that was me, right? Conflict in my house. I'm an adult now, so as soon as somebody starts raising their voice, I'm out. I'm a runner. I'm gone. Because that's what conflict meant to me in my house. So I, as an adult, I'm painful, but it's good. I'm learning that just because someone's being passionate about what they're talking about doesn't mean I'm going to get hurt. But that's what conflict meant in my home. So hypersensitive to conflict and disrespect. We've got a bunch of fears. I'm just going to go through them real quick. We have a fear of getting hurt. We have a fear of change. This is a good one. We have a fear of change. We like things to stay the same because that's where we feel safe. Change back then meant fear. We're fear of the unknown. We don't know what's going to come, what's happening, and it probably is going to be not good, and it's going to hurt us, and we've got no one to help us through that hurt, so let's just go back to keeping things the same. So you've got people that we know that I met somebody from high school not too long ago, exactly the same, has not changed even a little bit, like still stuck in the bubble of high school, and this is like 40 years later. Fear of change. We have this inherent fear of change, fear of the unknown. Many of us fear success. There's lots of things that I could have been crazy successful at, but as soon as I got to a certain level of success, I sabotaged. We sabotage. It's like, what if I am really successful at something, then everybody's going to look at me, and then there's going to be this pressure to perform, and I don't know if I can stay up there because I've got this fear and this shame that's deep inside of me. What if they, it's too scary. I'm going to sabotage my success. So many of us live with that fear of success, and we sabotage. I'd rather wait for that other shoe to drop. I'd rather do it myself than wait for somebody else to do it. Okay, that's a lot of information. That's about two classes worth. I don't want to overload you. So that's codependency because of complex trauma. We're codependent because of the complex trauma. Each one of us has a different story. Some of us have the exact same stories. I used to think, good God, I don't want anybody to know my story because that would be so shame, like nobody else has gone through that. I'll tell you right now, half the people in this room have gone through what I went through. And that's very abusive caregivers and sexual abuse. To me, that was normal. People would say, oh my God, you poor thing, that must have been horrible. That was just my normal. I thought every kid went through that. That was just my normal. But because of all of that abuse, my needs weren't getting met, my whole world got twisted upside down, and the glasses that I now looked out of as an adult were all distorted, and it wasn't real. Learning to live this way it's scary, but it's a lot easier. I don't have any filters anymore. I used to be very quiet because you ask me a question, and I'm going, what's the right answer? What's the right answer? What do they want me to tell? Now I just, my answer's comes through myself because myself is all my flaws. You guys know my flaws. There are character defects that I'm working on. That's a human thing. Nothing to be ashamed about. We're all wounded warriors. Yeah. Cool. You guys are awesome. Thanks.